be riding with us when the Chinese came like a banshee on the wind. When the smoke turned out of Gettysburg, many a mother wept, for many a good boy died there sure in air snow just like that. I am the Crane of the 20th Maine, and I march to hell and back again. Colonel Joshua Chamberlain, we all going down.
Out there, a happy, happy Veterans Day, and thank you for your sacrifice, be it war or peace. You paid your dues, and you gave it your all. God bless you, and thank you. You saved my family's life. Whether you did it 100 years ago or you did it yesterday. So, welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. And the tune I just played for you is called Dixieland, and it's by a guy named Steve Earle, and it's about an Irishman who comes to the United States just in time to be thrown on the front lines. And apparently there is a Civil War hero that many people don't know about, including me, and his name was Joshua Chamberlain. And if you Google it, I think you'll go for an exciting venture and see how many unsung heroes we have that we don't even know about. And I dedicate this show to Uncle Jack, who served on Iwo Jima with the Marines. And when he died, he left money for a party. And that, after the funeral service, everybody went to the pub and hoisted a few, and that's the way he wanted it. He was a good man. He married and loved only one woman, and he lost her, and he raised his 4 children as a bachelor father. And he never married again, and he never talked about Iwo Jima, but you could see that if you saw anybody that fought with the Marines in the Pacific, they have an aura about them. So, here's to all you guys out there, who, especially the guys who came back from Nam that got spit on at the airport. We let you down. You never let us down. Hallelujah. There is a picture of Obama on the internet where he's standing on a platform out in an open field. And they're playing the Star Spangled Banner. And he's got his hand on his balls. Everybody else has got their hand over their heart. And that's all I need to see to know what kind of a liar Obama is. And that Congressman Joe, what's his name, that called him a liar, should do it again. And add to it, I was right the first time. You are a liar. And this time, don't apologize. So, I'm going to play for you with the tune that Obama dissed. Okay, it's called, you may not remember it because they're trying to remove it from all of the communist cucumber schools. It's called the Star Spangled Banner. And I apologize for the scratches in the record. But just think about this. This is a vinyl record, and it was made by the original cast of World War II. There's 47 scratches in this record, and each one represent 8,000 Americans who died so that you and I could complain about secondhand smoke and salt on the restaurant table. I guess you've heard about the scandal at Penn State University. You don't think that's the only university that's got a problem, do you? You don't think that only the Catholic Church has the homosexual pedophile priest scandal. You don't think that other schools are jam tight and jelly free. This is a deep-rooted problem. We're losing our country and we're losing our God. And we're all going to be in trouble one day. And if you don't think that child abuse is just a fad, just remember when you were 10 years old and how vulnerable you were. And the only reason that you were never abused is somebody was watching out for you, instead of laying in wait for you. Well, the sad news today is that the Demo Camo Royal Repuppy rape of Herman Cain in the communist media has cost Herman about 10% of the support of his woman voters. When it becomes obvious that he is falsely accused, he will get half of those votes back. The good news is he is picking up 20% of the black vote, which he never would have gotten because this white CNN media lynching turned off black Obama supporters who realized that they have seen these false accusations before. Nigel Innes from the Congress of Racial Equality describes it as the Mandingo syndrome. You have to give credit to Herman. He soldiered on and up above the fray. If you check the past history of the political bimbos, you can see a greedy pattern there. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's votes. Which brings me to the crisis of God and his laws, which are being erased by atheistic communists who hold office throughout the land. From judges who legislate from the bench to federal attorneys who crucified Jesus. That's Jesus Diaz, or Jesus Diaz. The border guard, whose family was destroyed this past week, their assets seized under orders from the Mexican drug lords, who are supported with guns by Eric Holder, led by the example of George Bush, who would not pardon border guards Ramos and Campion, forcing those good men to sell their homes for legal fees. And here we go again. Obama will never pardon Jesus Diaz. Ergo, Congress must act to force the complete acquittal of Jesus. It must be done immediately to prevent further heartache to the innocent victims of this phony Department of Justice and drug runner protective agency. And speaking of Jesus, Harvard and Yale were once both divinity schools, blessing the nation with deeply religious patriots like Nathan Hale. We must turn back to God and ask him to help us regain the three American gifts he gave us: patriotism, spirituality, and morality. I would like to see religious people entering politics, especially priests, nuns, rabbis, ministers, not fake ones, and imams who preach love over jihad, not fakirs. We must put God back on his throne in our land. To deny him is to self-destruct. On this Veterans Day, where American crosses dot many lands and forgotten islands, let us thank God. He is always there to console us. And today I wear my red, white, and blue cross. God and country are forever, and we all need to come home. Do you remember when the military failed to close the perimeter around Tora Bora? And they relied on the Pakistanis to patrol one area, and that was the area that Osama bin Laden escaped through. And can you believe that it took us 5 years to find out where he was when he was having lunch at the Pakistani base every day? I'm making that up. That we don't know if he did that or not. He probably ate at home. He probably got pizzas delivered to the house. But do you remember the Bush administration telling us he wasn't that important? When I heard that, I just shook my head. And then, of course, Bush had a mandate to get bin Laden. He could have done anything. He could have nuked Pakistan to get him. Of course, the Democrats would have called for hearings. But instead, we were told, we were brainwashed, that bin Laden wasn't that important. It was the mission that was more important, getting Al-Qaeda. But anyway, I wonder who made up the expression, I got a frog in my throat. But anyway, it was Obama bin Laden who got Osama bin Laden. And he immediately took full credit for it. And he also took credit for the war on one-gun Gaddafi. Yeah. And you know how Muammar ended up in a very unpleasant position with certain things inserted in certain places. But you didn't see that on TV. I thought maybe Brad Pitt would play Muammar Gaddafi. He came out today and he reminded everybody that the poor people are struggling. And I said, hey, Brad, you know what you do? Why don't you take the royalties from your last movie and donate it to charity? Where did Brad go? Yeah, I love it, man. All these Hollywood freaks. And there's Brad Pitt. He's a good-looking guy. And it's the only job in the world where you get to play a man. you can get to play a real man, you know? His Brad Pitt's in the movie where he's in love with an Indian girl and everybody does him wrong and he's out there fighting grizzly bears. Yep. And Matt Damon, you know, another one. All these Hollywood lefties. They are lefties. They're so far left. What's happening here? These guys are so far left that when they go to a square dance, the only way they can dance is if the caller says everybody circle to the left. Today you want to make a Hollywood movie, you got to have a vampire. Hollywood puts out a lot of crap. You get maybe one good movie a year. All the rest is garbage. And you know what? It's all from the same swill pot. If you want to make a Hollywood movie today, here's what you need. You need a vampire. You need a nymphomaniac. You need a dumb cop. You need an army general that's in a uniform two sizes too small. You need a you got to do the drugs. You have to do drug commercials throughout the entire movie. You got to shoot the heroin. You got to snort the horse. You got to suck on the weed. I mean, kids used to buy popcorn. Pretty soon they're going to come out of the theater. They're going to go to the candy stand, and all that's going to be there is methamphetamines, marijuana, medical marijuana for those guys with glaucoma. Yeah, give me a break. We're a nation of drug addicts. There's no good movies. There's nothing. They have to take something. Even in Broadway, they're doing Broadway shows from 30, 40 years ago. Because there's no creativity left in America. There's no imagination left. All we got are a bunch of zombie minds. You think about it. What was the last thing that got invented in the United States? Absolutely ridiculous. We're all vegetables, walking vegetables. You go out in the street and pick five school kids and ask them to name the Great Lakes. See what they tell you. They'll probably tell you, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And, of course, poor Perry, he couldn't remember the third thing he wanted to close. That's a bad sign. That's a bad sign. And he said, help me out, guys. They could have told him anything. Disneyland, he would have said it. I'm digressing too much. Let me switch back to my tribute to the veterans.
Thinking of George Patton, and I ask myself how Tommy Franks could walk off a battlefield in the middle of a war. And somebody said, well, that's the policy in the Pentagon today. They don't want one general getting too popular. He's liable to overthrow the country. Yeah, I believe that. I do. I believe there's thinking that runs amok in Washington. Washington, as a matter of fact, as soon as the war began against Al-Qaeda, we should have hit Washington first ourselves and at least gotten the 48 Democrats who voted to burn the flag. So I'm doing some research on George Patton and to see what kind of a person he was, you know, little notes that he might have left behind. And you might say he was another Sherman. And isn't it funny, the first tank we had, we named after Sherman. And then we named the next one after Patton. And I found out there's a guy who named an orchid, a British, horticulturist, that bred an orchid. And he first named it after Joseph Stalin. But then when he found out what a butcher Stalin was, he went to the Horticultural Society and asked them to change the name of his orchid to Patton, in honor of George Patton. And for the first time in history, the society let him do it. One of the things I found out about Patton was he was a little bit of a poet. And he wrote a poem, and I printed it out, and I'm going to read it to you. If you ever saw the movie Patton, you will remember that when he was in North Africa, He told the driver to pull over to the seaside, and I think he was somewhere in ancient Carthage. And he said, "I've been here before." You know, and it was sort of eerie and uncanny. So I ran across this poem, and it sort of elaborates or embellishes what his thoughts were when he made that statement. And the name of the poem is "Through a Glass Darkly" by General George S. Patton, Jr. Did you know he was thrown out of West Point? Because he failed a test? Him and another guy. Do you know that a guy saved his life in World War I? And the same guy led a march on Washington and for bonuses for the troops, and they were driven off out of Washington by MacArthur and Patton. I didn't know Patton was involved in that. It's ironic. So this guy really traveled through time. And here's "Through a Glass Darkly." "Through the travail of the ages, midst the pomp and toil of war, have I fought and strove and perished countless times upon this star, in the form of many people, in all panoplies of time, have I seen the luring vision of the victory made sublime. I have battled for fresh mammoth, I have warred for pastures new, I have listened to the whispers when the race trek instinct grew. I have known the call to battle in each changeless changing shape, from the high-souled voice of conscience to the beastly lust for rape. I have sinned and I have suffered, played the hero and the knave, fought for belly, shame, or country, and for each have found the grave. I cannot name my battles, for the visions are not clear. Yes, yet I see the twisted faces, and I feel the rending spear." Next one's a rocker. "Perhaps I stabbed our Savior in his sacred helpless side, yet I've called his name in blessing when after times I died. In the dimness of the shadows where we hairy heathens warred, I can taste in thought the lifeblood. We use teeth before the sword." He says in his memoirs that any man who thinks that the war that they are fighting will be the war that ends all wars is a fool, and that wars have been fought since 2500 B.C. "While in later clearer vision I can sense the coppery sweat, feel the pikes grow wet and slippery when our phalanx Cyrus met." So he's talking about battling with the Persian king. "Hear the rattle of the harness where the Persian darts bounced clear. See the chariots wheel in panic from the hoplite's leveled spear. See the goal grow monthly longer, reaching for the walls of Tyre. Hear the crash of tons and granite. Smell the quenchless eastern fire. Still more clearly as a Roman can I see the legion close, Still more clearly as a Roman can I see the legion close, as our third rank moved in forward, and the short sword found our foes." The Roman soldiers had a short sword, and they found it less cumbersome in close hand-to-hand combat. And it was one of their secrets, military battle secrets at the time. "Once again I feel the anguish of what blistering treeless..." Let me do that again. "Once again I feel the anguish of that blistering treeless plain, when the Parthian showered death bolts and our discipline was in vain. I remember all the suffering of those arrows in my neck, yet I stabbed a grinning savage as I died upon my back. Once again I smelled the heat sparks when my Flemish plate gave way, and the lance ripped through my entrails as on Crecy's field I lay. In the windless, blinding stillness of the glittering tropic sea, I can see the bubbles rising when we set the captives free. Like the spume of health of half a tempest, I have heard the bulwarks go, when the crashing, point-blank round shot sent destruction to our foe. I have fought with gun and cutlass on the red and slippery deck, with all hell aflame within me and a rope around my neck. And still later, as a general, have I galloped with Murat, when we laughed at death and numbers, trusting in the Emperor's star. Till at last our star faded, and we shouted in our doom, when the sunken road of Ohain closed us in its quivering gloom. So but now with tanks a-clatter have I waddled on the foe, belching death at 20 paces by the star shell's ghastly glow. So as through a glass and darkly the age-long strife I see, where I fought in many guises, many names, but always me. And I see not in my blindness what the objects were I wrought, but as God rules o'er our bickerings, it was through his will I fought. So forever in the future shall I battle as of yore, dying to be born a fighter, but to die again once more. Not bad, eh? Not bad for a general. Not bad for a man. Talk to you. Give you a little music. Hiya, boys and girls, it's Captain Boycott. I found this on the internet and I thought I'd share it with you. And then I'll tell you who wrote it. Twice in my lifetime, America, the arsenal of democracy, has come from behind to ensure victory. It is not evident that should another war arise, those producing it will make every effort to see that the arsenal of democracy is knocked out in the first round.
How this can be done, I do not know. But I do know that the progress made in airplanes and self-propelled missiles is such that the possibility of an early knockout cannot be discounted. Perhaps a good illustration of what I am trying to put across to you is this. When I went to school, and I presume that is the same now, all of the children were taught how to form in column and march out of the building in an orderly manner in case of fire. This instruction did not, so far as I know, produce fires, but when fire occurred, the lives of the majority of children were saved. If we go to the extreme of saying that preparedness produces wars, then the instruction in fire drills would produce fires. Therefore, we should not teach children that a fire may come, that the building may burn, and as a result of such teaching, have the sad duty of removing the charred little bodies from the ruined schoolhouse. You men are all American citizens, and in your generation, you will have a very large voice in determining the election of our public servants and the enforcement of our laws. I am sure that you have found out that discipline, self-reliance, mutual respect, and faith are necessary in the Army. Those traits are just as necessary in civilian life. Laws which are not enforced had better not be promulgated. Referring again to the fire department aspect of the prevention of war, a very large proportion of the duties of the fire departments in large cities is not the extinguishing of fires, but their prevention through advice and supervision. You men are all potential firemen. You have put out the fire by your heroic efforts. It is now your duty as citizens to see that other fires do not occur, and that you and your children are not again called upon to extinguish them. I have been speaking to you not as your commanding general, but rather as an old man to young men. I am in no way trying to propagandize you, but as I said before, it is my considered opinion that my duty demands that I should explain to you things as I see them. Let me say that it is my profound hope that we shall never again be engaged in war, but also let me remind you of the words attributed to George Washington. In time of peace, prepare for war. That advice is still good. I am firmly convinced that we must have universal training, because the one hope for a peaceful world is a powerful America, with the adequate means of instantly checking aggressors. Unless we are so armed and prepared, the next war will probably destroy us. No one who has lived in a destroyed country can view such a possibility with anything except horror. Man is war, war is conflict, fighting is an elemental exposition of the age-old effort to survive. If we again believe that wars are over, we will surely have another, and damned quick. We had better look out for ourselves and make the rest of the world look out for themselves. If we attempt to feed the world, we will starve and perhaps destroy America. Roman civilization fell due to the loss of the will to conquer, satisfaction with the status quo and high taxes, which destroyed trade and private enterprise. These conditions eventually forced people out of the cities. The cycle is returning. It is very easy for ignorant people to think that success in war may be gained by the use of some wonderful invention like the atomic bomb, rather than by hard fighting and superior leadership. There are a host of people who have to squat to piss, who will say that this will be the last war, and that from now on we will only need world clubs. They are the ones who will be responsible for the deaths of millions of people.
The pacifists are always at it. I met a visiting fireman of supposedly great eminence who told me that this was to be the last war. I told him that statements since 2600 B.C. had signed such statements. Since 2600 B.C. had signed the death warrants of millions of young men. He replied with the stock lie. Oh, but things are different now. My God, will they never learn? There are all kinds of low-class slime who are trying and will continue to try to wreck this country from the inside. Most of them don't know it, but they're actually working for the Russians. Some of them do know it, though, and it doesn't matter whether they call themselves communists, socialists, or just plain foolish liberals. They are destroying this country. Politicians are the lowest form of life on earth. Liberal Democrats are the lowest form of politicians. I really shudder for the future of our country. Someone must not only win the war, but also the peace. I believe that Germany should not be destroyed, but rather should be rebuilt as a buffer against the real danger, which is Russia and its Bolshevism. The difficulty in understanding the Russian is that we do not take cognizance of the fact that he is not a European, but an Asiatic, and therefore thinks deviously. We can no more understand a Russian than a Chinese or a Japanese, and from what I have seen of them, I have no particular desire to understand them, except to ascertain how much lead or iron it takes to kill them. In addition to his other amiable characteristics, the Russian has no regard for human life, and they are all out sons of bitches, barbarians, and chronic drunks. Russia knows what she wants, world domination, and she is laying her plans accordingly. We, on the other hand, in England and France, to a lesser extent, don't know what we want. We get less than nothing as a result. If we have to fight them, now is the time. From now on, we will get weaker and they will get stronger. Let's keep our boots polished, bayonets sharpened, and present a picture of force and strength to the Russians. This is the only language that they understand and respect. If we fail to do this, then I would like to say we have had victory over the Germans and have disarmed them, but we have lost the war. The one thing that I could not say and cannot yet say publicly is that my chief interest in establishing order in Germany was to prevent Germany from going communist. I am afraid that our foolish and utterly stupid policy in regard to Germany will certainly cause them to join the Russians and thereby ensure a communistic state throughout Western Europe. We have destroyed what could have been a good race of people, and we are about to replace them with Mongolian savages and all of Europe with communism. Poland is under Russian domination, so is Hungary, so is Czechoslovakia, and so is Yugoslavia, and we sit happily by and think that everybody loves us. It seems to me that Russia has a certain sphere of influence in Korea, Manchuria, and Mongolia. We promised the Europeans freedom. It would be worse than dishonorable not to see that they have it. And that's where I finished up. But you know what? You listen to what Patton says, and the enemy is only slightly different. And the day will come when the draft will have to come back if we have time to assemble. And I do believe his philosophy is right about the next great hit. And I think that when you look at 9-1-1, that was only two planes and that was only two buildings in one city. And God help us if that's 1,000 planes and 1,000 buildings and 100 cities. And anybody who thinks that they're immune because they don't live in New York City is also being very foolish. Talk to you, boys and girls.
Just a quick follow-up to what I just read. I forgot to tell you who the general was that said it, but if you know anything about World War II, it wouldn't be too hard to figure out. And it's really funny because I met a guy who served under Patton, just a regular G.I. Joe. He's 82 years old, and he said that he was 37 miles outside of Berlin and was stopped by Franklin Roosevelt. And they had to wait 3.5 months for the Russians to catch up, so that the Russians could go in and decimate Berlin. And something interesting about when the Russians did go into Berlin that you may or may not know. But Joseph Stalin issued the order of the day. And this is, if this isn't a pro-life message, then nothing is. When he issued his order of the day, he told the Russian army that no man would be tried for any crime committed against the Germans. And he said that the only innocent German in this war is the unborn. So how do you like that? Now, if you go back and you listen to what Patton was talking about, you know, the scene changes, but the battlefield remains the same. And I think the biggest shock that we as Americans are going to encounter is when the fools stop babbling about coalitions of the willing and how many allies we need. We have no allies. We have no coalitions of the willing. The only coalition of the willing we have is the willing 50, United States. And some of those states are starting to worry me, like Vermont, like Washington, like Oregon, like Massachusetts, like Rhode Island. God help us. If we can't stick together as one American Revolution spokesman said, if we can't hang together, gentlemen, surely we will hang separately. And we are hated. And we're hated for what we are. We're hated for being Americans. Spoiled, arrogant, consuming more 80% of the drugs in the world. Can't live with each other, 50% divorce rate. Going to the chop shop as for birth control. Yeah, we are the great Satan. Let's tell the truth. Let's tell the truth and shame the devil. We are the great Satan. But that doesn't mean we can't save ourselves. And we can save ourselves by pulling together and facing reality. And reality is the national anthem one day will be the farmer in the dell. And when we get to the part where the cheese stands alone, that's going to be us. And as soon as we get weak, our enemies will be at our gates. They're already inside. They're in the House and the Senate. You got 48 senators who voted to burn the flag. You got 135 Viet Congress mice who voted to burn the flag. You've got the media, which is already printing a fifth column. And you've got PC lawyers that are trying troops in the field. So we already have commissars. PC commissars in place. The Pentagon is now taking polls to see if they should make any moves. They've become more political than military. You've got a CYA that can't even find the bathroom. They can't even find yellow cakes in Niger. They got a secretary who sent a husband on a secret mission. That the New York Times announced to the country. How good is the CYA? How good is the FIB? Does the FIB work weekends? They didn't have one translator in the state of New Jersey when they could have taken documents written in Arabic to any shell station and waited 10 minutes. We've come down to become a nation of blamers. We elect the president and then we blame him. We elect a mayor and a governor, and then we blame him. And we're a bunch of crybabies and blamers. That's what we are. We're not the generation that won World War II. Far from it. we're down to 1% of the nation is fighting to keep us alive. The saddest thing that I've seen today that really got to me, that really drove the arrow into my chest, was the Moussaoui hearings. And people are talking about put him in jail for life. I don't want to buy him one frankfurter. Let him go to paradise. Let him get faked out. Let him find out that he's going to be short, that there are 72 virgins. Let him face reality. He sat there and said, "Burn in the USA," right? And I had to watch a grandfather tell the court today that he was talking to his son on a cell phone, who was sitting next to his wife and daughter-in-law, okay, and sitting next to their 2.5-year-old daughter. And all three were going into the wall at the WTC, and Grandpa got to watch the plane hit the building while he was talking to his son on the phone. What about that? Who settles that score? Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Well, let me tell you something. God could use some help in this matter. And Moussaoui should die. He should die quickly. He should get express checkout. And I don't want to pay for any bad guy living the life of luxury in a jail cell. And I don't want to. If they've claimed a life, they have to forfeit a life. And that's it. I'm sorry. I'll talk to you, boys and girls.
Our Father's God, to thee, author of liberty, to thee we sing. Long may holy light, protect us by thy might, great God our King. From every mountainside, let freedom ring.
Isn't it great that we can live in this land of this cornucopia of everything, in the land of milk and honey, and we can skip to work every day singing fa la la, and we don't have to worry about those people out there that are trying to kill us? That we have a 1% of the nation that will die for us just so we can party on and make sure that we can import enough drugs to keep us happy from Mexico. We don't care that 50,000 Mexicans are dead because of it. That's their problem. We're being protected. Yeah, you want a flashback?
A gargantuan explosion. Oh, my God, I don't believe it. The northeast corner has exploded in the most incredible explosion. Flames are flying out of the building. They're 5-10 stories high now. Black billowing smoke. The building corner, the whole entire corner is gone.
Both World Trade Center buildings in New York City right now, heaps of rubble. At 9 o'clock this morning, a plane crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan.
I heard the noise. I was in my office, and I heard the guy screaming. So I ran out, and everybody was saying, oh, my God, and they're in tears. They're crying. Everybody's upset.
I was just trying to make phone calls. I looked up, and I heard an explosion, and then I saw everybody in the street react first. People crying, people on the ground, everybody lying down. And then I looked up, and I saw this huge plume of smoke, and the tower just crumbling. And it just turned into a huge plume of smoke, and next thing you know, there's smoke in one tower.
Shortly after 9 o'clock, a second plane crashed into the second tower.
Oh, my God. I heard a noise coming in incredibly low. And then I was standing here looking out the window, and I knew it was going to crash, and something was going to hit the building. I dove away from the window because I thought the explosion was going to implode the windows and I'd be shattered with glass flying out. As soon as it hit, I came back and there was a ball of flame.
I'm still shaking. I saw it hit the tower and flame everywhere.
Then minutes later, President Bush in Sarasota, Florida, called those crashes an apparent terrorist attack and a national tragedy.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country. Terrorism against our nation will not stand. May God bless the victims, their families, and America.
Then an aircraft crashes near the Pentagon just outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia about an hour after those attacks in New York.
I was looking out our 12th floor windows at 1600 Wilson Boulevard in Roslyn, Virginia, and I watched this. It looked like a commuter plane, two engine, come down from the south, real low, proceed right on and crash right into the Pentagon.
Then shortly after 10 o'clock this morning, one World Trade Center tower in New York collapsed.
So lots of smoke, and then the next thing I heard, an explosion, and the building on the top, the south building, just crumbled.
Just after 10:30 this morning, the other World Trade Center tower collapsed.
We were standing there looking up at flames coming out of the building and smoke billowing out of the building and police and FBI everywhere, and suddenly we heard a rumble and the sky was full of smoke. Everybody ran, crowds of people running through, shouting out to each other not to fall into the subway entrances.
So it's just truly amazing because yesterday afternoon we were sitting in the World Trade Plaza Center having lunch, and so now those two buildings are completely destroyed.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming?
Was attacked this morning by a faceless coward, and freedom will be defended. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts. We will do whatever is necessary to protect America.
We must never forget the sacrifices that have been made by men and women for this country. And we must never forget the price that has been paid so that we can be free. Never to be slaves. listening to Mark Levin tonight, and he was upset because kids in a California school were told that they could not wear the American flag on their shirt. They had to turn it inside out because they were offending Cinco de Mayo. That's the 5th of May, isn't it? Yeah, what a joke. Mark was very upset. Mark, there's 48 senators who voted to burn the flag. Why should kids want to salute the flag when you got 48 bad examples in the Senate? And 125 Viet Congress mice also voted to burn the flag. And you know when they did it? They did it 40 days before 9/11. And after that, 1 year later, somebody introduced the legislation to protect the flag again, and it lost by one vote. And the same 48 voted to burn it. Thank God some of them are dead now. Like Ted Kennedy, who was in boiler number 3. Mr. Loverboy. I see that, who just came out? Did, Eddie Fisher's daughter, who played Princess Leia. She had a date with Christopher Dudd. Who would ever want to go on a date with that slob? Oh, my God. And Kennedy was there, and they were teasing her about having sex. How's that? There's Kennedy. Kennedy is burning in hell because he drove women to drink, and he drove women in the drink. But enough of flag burners and baby killers. Let us find something that we can all enjoy. I always play the Navy hymn in remembrance of the fallen. And if you ever get a chance, you should read Poppies in Flanders Field. It's a beautiful. It's more like a prayer than a poem. If I could recall, if you it has something to say, we pass the torch to thee, and if you fail to carry on, we will not sleep, even though poppies grow in Flanders Field. So I'm going to play you the Navy hymn, and I'm going to dedicate it to the guys that are coming back and have suicidal tendencies, and we're not paying attention, we're not watching out for them. We got to take a good look at them, we got to help them all. They're still fallen, they're still wounded, and we have to help them. And we have to keep an eye on them. And we have to keep an eye out for them. And I pray for the day when a pawn shop outside a military base goes out of business. I pray for the day when every military housewife doesn't have to put 2 cans of food back on the commissary shelf until next week. I pray they're getting paid well. They deserve more. They are our national treasure.
Thank you.
When life gets more than you can handle, there's only one place you can turn. You have to turn to God. If you look at all the wrecks in Hollywood that splinter and disintegrate, that are constantly in and out of jails and rehab units, and then finally they die in their sleep or on the toilet, and it's all, a lot of it is, most of it is drug-related, just like most of the crime in this country is drug-related. And the murder of 50,000 Mexicans is drug-related, and it's paid for by U.S. kids and their parents. But when all else fails and you've got nowhere else to turn, pull yourself into a church, a synagogue, go sit on a bench, and listen to the man. You'll get a message. You'll get a message. You'll get help. You want to pay a shrink of $500 an hour? Who's crazy? He's got more problems than you got. Yeah. You want to follow a guy in a diaper? Go sit on a mountain? Forget about it. Get to God. And God will get to you. And when all else fails, and you've got nowhere else to turn, just open that church door and walk in and go sit on a bench. And you'll do all right. Hang in there. Here's a 911 song.
The valley is worth. The flowers are all dying. The meadow is white with the winter snow.
Thank you. never will.